Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, a great scholar, one of the greatest scholars, we have, I don't know if he's still alive, we have one very famous professor, Dr. Ingalls. Maybe somebody knows him. He wrote a book on logic, and he wrote books on Indian logic, Nyaya, and Navya-Nyaya. So Navadvip was like Oxford or Cambridge or something nowadays, Harvard. So he mentions Navadvip there, and he mentions Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya there, in that book on logic. And he says, but Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, his guru, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's guru, Raghunath Vasudev was a very great logician. Sarvabhauma was not so great because there came one Chaitanya and he defeated him. But I mean, he put the whole Leela, a little Leela into the book on logic. And it's so involved. So he's speaking this verse, and he's speaking this verse very emotionally, being unhappy about the husband of his daughter. So that's why he's providing Shastric basis for what should be done. He says maybe she should give him up, or better still, let him die. It's very dramatic story with a lot of tension and unexpected conflicts. So he's quoting this verse. Srila Prabhupada gives a purport. This is a quotation from Smriti Shastra as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.11.28. Santushta lolupadaksha dharma gya priya satyavak apramatta shuchi snigda patim tva patitam bhajet. You can see it says one should worship and love the husband. A wife who is satisfied, who is not greedy, who is expert and knows religious principles. So the wife should know the religious principles, dharma gya. Means she should learn them. Who speaks what is dear and truthful and is not bewildered, who is always clean and affectionate, should be very devoted to her husband, who is not fallen. There is an indemnity clause included from the Bhagavatam. Brilliantly, Srila Prabhupada includes our main pramana, Srimad Bhagavatam. So, a few more verses in this section we read. 266. Shairatre amoga kaham palana gela pradakaletara visuchaka vyadhihaila. That night, Amogha, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's son-in-law, fled. And in the morning, he immediately fell sick with cholera. You know what's cholera, huh? People die very quickly. Not even because of the disease, but of dehydration. It's rather quick, I mean, just in 1 or 2 days, if they don't get enough water, and not just water, electrolytes, means like at least salty and sweet water. Just put sugar and salt and water, and maybe they will survive. And give a lot of it, maybe they will survive. Plus some, whatever, antibiotics, whatever else they... So he and those days, it was it was almost a certain death, practically a certain death. 267. Amoga maren suniko he batta charya sahai ho yadaiva kailamora karja. When Bhattacharya heard that Amoga was dying of cholera, he thought, it is the favor of providence that he is doing what I want to do. A kind Vaishnava, a kind Advaita Acharya, who got Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Karuna Avatar, come, and Nityananda Prabhu come. He says, very good, he's dying a bad death, excellent. How is it so? Why would he be so heavy on him? 268. Ishwarito aparade pala tatakan etaboli pare due shastra vachan. When one offends the Supreme Personality of Godhead, karma immediately takes effect. After saying this, he recited two verses from revealed scripture. And for my section, I have one verse. 269 from the Mahabharata, a rather famous verse spoken by Bhimasen. Mahatahi prayatnena hastyashva ratapattibi asmabhiryadanushteyam gandharvaistadanushtitam. What we have had to arrange with great endeavor by collecting elephants, horses, chariots, and infantry soldiers has already been accomplished by the Gandharvas. And this is a quotation from the Mahabharata, Vanaparva, chapter 241, verse 15. Bhimasena made this statement when all the Pandavas were living incognito, in exile. At that time, there was a fight between the Kauravas and the Gandharvas. The Kaurava soldiers were under the command of Karna, but the commander-in-chief of the Gandharvas was able to arrest all the Kauravas by virtue of superior military strength. At that time, Duryodhana's ministers and commanders who were living in the forest requested Maharaj Yudhishthir to help. After being thus petitioned, Bhimasen spoke this verse given above, remembering Duryodhana's former nefarious and atrocious activities against them. Indeed, Bhimasena felt it very fitting that Duryodhana and his company were arrested. This could have been accomplished by the Pandavas only with great endeavor. Om Agnate Mirandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyaiva Chapatitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. My humble obeisances to all the Vaishnava devotees who are like desire trees, capable of fulfilling desires of everyone, who are Kripa Sindhubhya, oceans of mercy. So you're all not just little mercy, but oceans of mercy. And if somebody does not deserve and is fallen, then also Patitanam Pavanebhyo, the saviors and purifiers of the fallen. So my obeisances to all the Vaishnavas. Yasya prasadadagyopi sate sarvagyatam rajat sashi chatanna devame bhagavan samprasidatu. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, my obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, may he be merciful unto me. By his grace, a complete fool can get all knowledge in one moment. I think it's a perfect deal. All three things are very convenient. Even a complete fool, all knowledge in one moment. I like it. It's from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, some other verses. Shri Chaitanya Padam Bhoja Madhupebhyo Namo Nama Katanjida Shayade Sham Shapidat Ganda Bhagavat. My respectful obeisances to all the devotees of Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who are like honeybees. Because even a dog, or Prabhupada says, doggish non-devotee, even a dog taking shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees, somehow or other, will also get a share of that honey. As I got in this morning, some real honey from some special occasion from. So if I say something too happy, don't blame me, blame him. Sorry. Hare Krishna. And one verse from Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he gives it in the 10th canto, very beautiful verse, where he says,
Mama ratnavani bhavam ratnanya parichinvita hasantu santu jihre minasa santa vinodakrit.
Even though being ignorant in jewelry, I take upon myself the role of a jewel merchant, however, I am not going to be ashamed and embarrassed because at least I will give a good laugh to my dear devotees. This is one good thing that will happen.
Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
A devotee, a Vaishnava, a Bhakta is friendly. A Bhakta, a devotee, a Vaishnava is a well-wisher of everybody. This is also a definition of a Brahmana, para dukkha dukkhi para sukha sukhi. You are happy to see others happy. And just a Brahmana, not even a devotee. What to speak about a devotee? So a devotee definitely is kind. It's one of the very first qualities of a devotee. He is kind, well-wishing, and friendly. So friendly includes everybody, almost everybody. We are practicing to be Madhyam Bhaktas. Madhyam Bhaktas, not Kanishtha Bhaktas. Madhyam Bhaktas. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami says, a Kanishtha Bhakta is hardly a devotee. Not even a devotee. Maybe a candidate. He's accepted as a devotee just so he can associate with devotees. A devotee is a Madhyam Bhakta. So, interestingly enough, also you can see in the Bhagavatam many personalities request for a blessing which matches the description of a Madhyam Bhakta, yeah, for types of activities and practices. Yeah. Many mics train the speaker in humility, you know? More and more. This looks interesting. So Madhyam Bhakta means that Ishvara to the Lord, Ishvara tadadhineshu, balisheshu, vishatucha, prema. To Ishvara, to the Lord, we practice prema, loving relationship. To tadadhineshu, those who have come to the Lord for shelter. Those who have accepted him as their Lord and protector. A devotee, a Madhyam Bhakta, is practicing Maitri, friendship. And to Balisheshu. Balisheshu literally means like children, childlike. So we translate innocent and In modern English, it means not guilty. However, in the archaic British English, which is used in that older translation of the Mahabharata and which Srila Prabhupada likes to use, innocent means one who doesn't know, ignorant. You might have encountered this type of meaning. Innocent means ignorant, doesn't know, they don't know. So to such personalities, if we try to be Madhyam Bhaktas, we practice what do we practice? Compassion. Thank you. Compassion. So I sometimes joke, if you see somebody doing wrong, if you see somebody wrong, this means they don't know how to do things right. So that means they are ignorant. So that means they fit into that childlike category. That means you know, they don't know. So that means if the guy is wrong, that means you as a madhyam are supposed to practice compassion towards the guy. Yeah, he doesn't know. He doesn't know. So our duty, compassion. It may take different forms, but the inner attitude is compassion. And to rascal, envious, inimical demons, Madhyam Bhakta is practicing upeksha, which is a beautiful Sanskrit word used in whoever knows any Indian languages. It's a beautiful word, means indifference, like or neutrality. So physically we avoid, but also internally we avoid. Hating, we try not to hate back, because just hating back doesn't help reduce the amount of hatred or problem, right? So these four are the activities. So devotee is friendly, always. So here we see a whole drama. We see Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is so happy to cook for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they have the whole floor filled with beautiful preparations. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, from time to time, he launches into a 20-page description of the recipe, like a cookbook. It reads like a cookbook. You know? There was this preparation and that type of a sweet. And so he and his wife, they prepared that feast for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya himself was standing with a stick at the door, so his rascal son-in-law, Amogha, does not sneak in because he was too critical. And somehow or other, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya couldn't prevent Amogha from stealing a peek. Somehow he had to bring something to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Amogha picked him and he saw it and he said, "Ah, what kind of a sannyasi is that? So many preparations are there." And Sarvabhauma is so pained. He's chasing with the stick, cannot catch Amogha, and he is apologizing profusely to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, "Why apologize? He's right. He's correct. You know, sannyasi doesn't eat such luxury food in such amounts. So what he says is correct." So, but Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is inconsolable. He says, "I would kill him, but that's not proper. He's a Brahmana. I would kill myself, but that's also not proper. I'm also a Brahmana." So that also would be a Brahmahatya sin. So then here he says, maybe, yeah, and he says, he speaks some things that are unspeakable for relatives. He says, "May our daughter become a widow. May our daughter become a widow." Who wants their daughter to become a widow? You never want your daughter to become a widow, because I mean, and it's also both Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his wife, both of them, curse Amogha. "May our daughter become a widow." Again, they don't curse him. It's also, you can see, it's such a subtle culture. They don't curse him. "May you die." No death threats. No. We are talking about our daughter. Not him, our daughter. We're talking about her life. So may she become a widow. How that happens, that's a different matter. You know? But the thing is that we are not talking about him, we are talking about her. May she become a widow. And then he quotes these verses that husband may be abandoned if he's fallen. And and the whole list, and
as a result,
yeah. of these curses and as a result of these actions, Amoga does fall sick. And he's just about to die. And when Sarvama hears, he says, beautiful. It's really beautiful. I didn't have to do anything. Nobody had to do anything. Providence has arranged everything. And he quotes the verse from Bhima. So Bhima, they had to go to exile. They had to go to the forest. And you know how this fight happened, right? That Duryodhana came to the forest to gloat is a perfect German word, Schadenfreude, which is used in English as it is, verbatim. Schadenfreude. You're happy to see somebody suffer. Ha 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 ha. We have gloating, something similar, yeah? But Schadenfreude. So, so he's very happy to see the Pandavas suffer, and he thinks, yeah, he goes in great opulence. He takes all the friends and who know the Pandavas, who have seen them enjoy immense opulence and power and fame, to see them humiliated in the forest, living like ascetics. It says sometimes that they were wearing tree bark, which I always was puzzled about, always puzzled me, until yesterday I asked Ramiya Prabhu, what are these things hanging from the trees? And he told me, this is Spanish moss. And he said, you said that the indigenous people used to sometimes wear it as clothes. So I looked at it, and it does look like, you know, fluffy, and you sort of can wear it to some extent. He probably, of course, first asked from the management if it's appropriate to come to the temple in this attire, dressed in the Spanish moth dhoti. So, after being the most opulent emperors, they were reduced to banished, exiled, almost ostracized kings, and Duryodhana comes to laugh at them, to gloat, to enjoy their humiliation. And Chitrarata Gandharva cannot take it, cannot tolerate it, so he attacks Duryodhana. Chitrarata met Arjuna before. They already fought when before they married Draupadi. Or was it right after? After the burning of the Shilak Varanavata palace. So they went to a river too late, and then the Gandharvas said, hey, that's not your time, don't go to, didn't you read the Vaishnava etiquette? You don't walk in the forest in the night. And so they attacked. The Pandavas said, well, if you don't like it, you can chase us away, but we are gonna camp here, we are gonna, I don't remember, what did they want, water, or what did they want from that riverfront. And so they attacked. Chitrarata started shooting arrows, and Arjuna just swatted them aside with his torch. So Chitrarata was impressed, and they became friends. That's the Vedic fighting for you. You know? They fight, and he sees, oh, he's a good fighter. Let's be friends. I like how you fight. He gave them some advice, and then they met again in the heavenly planets, and he taught Arjuna singing and dancing. And that came in handy when he was teaching Princess Uttara to dance and sing. He became this mountain of muscles. Arjuna became the dance teacher for the tender princess Uttara. He learned from Chitrarata in the heavenly planets. He gave them the indefatigable, the never tiring white horses which were drawing Arjuna's chariot in the Kurukshetra battlefield. So he, feeling friendly, he comes and he defeats Karna, and he arrests Duryodhana. He throws Duryodhana bound into his space, whatever it is, vehicle, spaceship. And Bhima Sena is happy. He says, "Wow! To achieve this, we would have to go through so much trouble, and just see, there is God. God is there. There is justice. See, he did everything by providence. Duryodhana, he came to laugh at us, and we will laugh at him." And Yudhishthir says, wait, no. This is not good. Look, you know what? He's our cousin. Actually, he's our brother. Hey, actually, he's our family. No. We cannot allow it. That's a disgrace. You know what? Bhima, go free. Bhima, Arjuna, you go free Duryodhana. Bhima says, "What? Yudhishthir, are you okay? You have a fever? This is Duryodhana. He came to make fun of us." Yudhishthir says, no, this is not good dharma. That may be, he may be a rascal, maybe, but he is our relative and we need to protect him. Bhima says, "This is crazy. What are you talking about?" "Look, Bhima, you're a good man, but I'm your senior brother, so elder brother. And I know dharma. Our dharma is to, Arjuna, go free Duryodhana." Okay, Arjuna, okay, brother says, quote Shastra. All right, he goes. And he attacks Chitrarata. And Chitrarata, on the open radio frequency says, Arjuna, this is Chitrarata. What are you doing? I came to help you. Hey, this is me. Don't attack me. I came to help. Duryodhana came to laugh at you." So Arjuna says, "Chitrarata, thank you. I appreciate, but please either release Duryodhana or I'll fight with you, despite us being friends." So Chitrarata says, "Well, it's weird, I must admit, but if you want it, okay, have him. You can have your Duryodhana. I don't need him. I have no trouble with Duryodhana." So he releases Duryodhana. And so Arjuna brings Duryodhana back, and Yudhishthir says, "Oh, Duryodhana, welcome, dear brother, you can go free." And he sends him off. Of course, there is something unexpected happen. I mean, what happens is that Duryodhana is so humiliated, after that story, he goes straight to a lake, goes straight to the bottom, and decides to die, commits suicide. He thinks, "This is too much. I was humiliated." You never see Yudhishthir thinking about suicide. How many times Yudhishthir was humiliated and they tried to kill him? You never see Yudhishthir singing, "Oh, what is this? This life is too much. I could just as well fast to death. That's too bad." But Duryodhana, he is the emperor of the world. He has everything. And he just couldn't have a laugh at the expense of the Pandavas. And immediately, being frustrated, he says, "Life is useless. I'm dying. I'm going to go and drown myself." And it takes a whole bunch of demons to get him out and say, "What do you think you're doing? You are our instrument. You're supposed to go and fight and continue, and we'll help you. Don't worry, we'll help you." So they convince him not to drown. So this is the story, and this is the quote from which this is taken. But I remember it struck me that amid so much suffering, Yudhishthir never thinks about suicide. At Duryodhana, just one frustration, immediately he thinks about suicide. immediately he cannot stomach, he cannot take, endure even slight humiliation or glitch in his plans. So you know the next of this story, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he immediately goes to Amogha, puts his hand on the chest of Amogha, and he says, Amogha, this is the heart of a Brahmana. Why do you keep envy in such a pure place meant for God? Why do you keep envy in this, in your heart? Just give it up. And then Amogha becomes cured of cholera on the spot, and he becomes totally devoted to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He becomes a devotee immediately. So there's a happy end there. In fact, Krishna Kshetra Maharaj keeps saying that we can't have a real tragedy in our literature, because there is never a bad end, because there's always the next life. You know? it's never a total bad end. There's always the next life. You can correct some mistakes. So a very happy end here, which illustrates how Krishna, how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, being insulted does not feel insulted. Being attacked does not stop being kind and merciful and friendly. And even when it sort of works out on its own, Amogha is dying. I mean, nobody did that. Nobody came and found, you know, some of that cholera. What do they call them? They are long bacteria, long, like a little, I mean, these cholera.
They're like virus.
How are they called?
Virus,
but they are like sticks, little sticks. There's some Latin word for that.
How are they?
Yeah. So nobody's gonna, you know, trying to find some of that cholera bacillus or and put in Amogha's food. It happens on its own. So everybody could have just, you know, washed their hands and said, "Ha, see, we didn't do this. We didn't do anything. That's just divine justice. Divine justice. Universal justice." Which is exactly what Sarvam Bhattacharya is saying. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes and saves, and not only saves, he converts. Not only converts, he makes him a very happy, nice, ecstatic devotee. Amogha becomes a wonderful devotee. So this is all connected to the topic of envy, enmity, hostility. Whenever Srila Prabhupada says envy, sometimes we get a little confused or we misunderstand this, because we normally use the word envy in the sense of what we would call white envy, meaning that I want what he has or she has. However, Srila Prabhupada uses this word envy in the rather older British meaning of hostility. You wish bad to others. What we would call black envy, right? You want them to suffer. We want them to suffer. Hostility, or himsa. And that's how Srila Prabhupada, himsa drohan in Sanskrit. So that's how Srila Prabhupada is using this word, envy. And this envy exists everywhere. This envy exists everywhere. We can be envious. Prabhupada says humans are envious of animals. Humans are envious of cows. So it doesn't mean that you want to, you know, eat grass like a cow. It means that we are hostile to cows. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says we are hostile to God. We are hostile to God. We are envious of God. That we heard, we are envious of God. I remember when once I was preparing for the Gita class, the fifth chapter, there's a verse about Krishna. Krishna says about three doers. Who is the doer? We have three candidates. You. So who's guilty? One candidate is you, the jiva. And then there's the nature, three modes. And there is God, who controls everybody and everything. So it's a rather confusing topic, who is guilty. So Krishna says, you're not the doer. This is the city of nine gates. But the city is modes, controlled by the modes, and the modes are controlled by God. So God must be guilty. That must be God's responsibility. So Krishna says, nadate kasyachit papam nachaiva sukritam vibhu agyane navritagyanam tena muhyanti jantava. I do not force anybody to be sinful or pious. Living entities themselves enter ignorance and delusion and act foolishly. And the next one, tesham adityavaj jnanam prakashayeti tatparam. When they, you want to sing this verse? That when they get knowledge, it's like the sun illuminating everything. So what is this knowledge that's like the sun illuminating everything? And the answer is quite shocking. The sun-like knowledge that illuminates everything is two things. Krishna is not guilty, and Krishna is not cruel. Vaishamya Nairgunya Na. He's not guilty, or he's not unfair, and he's not cruel. In other words, to put it positively, he's fair, and he's kind. So Baladeva Vidyabhushan, Srila Prabhupada, Sridhar Swami, they say, you know this, you know everything. It's like the sun that illuminates everything. And when I read it, I was actually shocked. I thought, I'm not free, I'm not liberated, I don't know everything about the material world. So what that means is that I, despite calling myself a devotee, so-called devotee, or, you know, considering myself a Krishna Bhakta to some extent, secretly must be still blaming and accusing Krishna for everything that's happening. And that's why I'm not free. Because if I stop accusing Krishna, I'm free. I will be free. So just to be able to say Krishna is kind and friendly to everybody, and Krishna is fair, Krishna is just, everything that he's doing is just, is perfect. Om Purnamidam Purnamada Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. One way to translate is this, this verse is to say that this is perfect. And he is perfect. And from the perfect comes perfect, and he's still perfect. It's not easy to say. he may be perfect. I'm not sure about this being perfect, or my left knee being perfect. I think some, you know, design defect has been or something happens. When something happens to him, usually we can think and we can say, I think it's karma. Looks like karma. I remember 3 years ago during the kirtan, he pushed me with the elbow so hard. What do you expect? Of course, you know, if they don't, something will come back. Right? But when something happens to me, I think, why me? I am chanting. I am coming to the temple regularly, every 3 months. For every Janmashtami, why me? What's wrong with Krishna? Must have made a mistake. He must have overlooked something. Either I know, he doesn't like my nose, or something. Doesn't like some arbitrary, you know, bias. He doesn't like something in me. Or that he's not friendly. But as soon as I'm able to say that Krishna is the best friend of everybody, and he's kind, and he's the friend of me, and Krishna is also fair, whatever is happening is the result of my actions, we are free. Tate nu kampam susamikshama no bunjana evatma kritam vipakam hidvagvapurbhir vidadam namaste jivetayo muktipade sadayaba. Brahma says, when a devotee is able to see everything as a result of my own actions, mitigated, as Prabhupada says, by Krishna's mercy, and continues to happily respect, bow down to Krishna's mercy, accept everything as Krishna's mercy. Finished. He is guaranteed muktipade, a place at the feet of lotus feet of Krishna. Finished. Your reservation on your spaceship back to Goloka Vrindavan is completely confirmed. They will send a taxi for you and you will be taken to Goloka Vrindavan, to the lotus feet of Krishna. Just by what? By accepting that Krishna is merciful. This is Krishna's mercy. So this is the exercise. This is our sadhana, to see everything as Krishna's mercy. This is Krishna's mercy. Krishna is kind. Krishna is merciful. And not accuse Krishna, not blame Krishna, not feel bad about Krishna's actions. Sincerely being grateful, thanking Krishna. They even have a special... This is the idea of our kirtan. We glorify Krishna. Glorify Krishna is saying Krishna is good. Not coming in, Krishna, Krishna, you are cruel. I think you like torturing people. Gopis may say it, but for them it's different. They are. This is the expression of their ecstasy. So, as soon as we learn to accept everything as Krishna's mercy, at least we are happy, but maybe even more. I remember at the Govardhan retreat some years ago. There's very erratic electricity, and my computer. One morning I turn on my computer and it stops charging. It looks like the charging unit has broken. Not the adapter, but the unit inside the computer. And I was distraught. It's just the beginning of the retreat. I had to do this and that, and it's not working. I mean, it's still working, but it's not charging. I will not be able to charge. And we are out at the Govardhan. What to do, and it's brought from America, how will I get a replacement? So I was very, very disturbed. So then we went to the Govardhan side, and Burijan Prabhu, he likes to give these exercises, free write. Just start writing something about your realizations. So I was, But then I remembered, I ask everybody to, whenever something happens, write 10 thank yous. Okay, let me eat my own medicine. Okay, let me, I can show you that, you know. I wrote it. Okay, let me write 10 thank yous for Krishna. Thank you, Krishna, that my computer is not charging. Because there is still some juice in the battery. Mm-hmm, okay, wow. Thank you, Krishna, that my computer is not charging because I have a spare battery. Thank you, Krishna, my computer is not charging, but at least I'm at Govardhan. Thank you, Krishna. And so I composed 10 thank yous. Of course, by thank you number 10, I didn't feel so bad anymore. And I thank you, Krishna. You are teaching me detachment. Thank you, Krishna. You are teaching me not to rely too much on, you know, the unreliable technology. Thank you, Krishna, for training me in tolerance, patience, and equanimity. So I composed as many as I could, and I felt, yeah, at least I did the exercise. And by the way, I strongly encourage to do this. You tell me the time schedule, we can do a lot of fun, we can have a lot of fun with some exercises and interactive exercises, but whenever something happens, just try to take a moment and compose 10 thank yous. It's also a perfect thing to do when we come to the deities or during kirtan, even during japa. And try 10. If 10 becomes easy, try 20. You can try even 100 thank yous, either in general or for some specific, especially for a problem. So if nothing else, it helps us to surrender. It teaches us how to see, because what is thank you? Thank you means it's your mercy. Krishna, merci. Grazie, it's your mercy. Yeah, it's your mercy. So what happened is that when I went back to my room and I plugged my computer back, it started charging. Krishna has a good sense of humor. And I tried everything before. I had an expert computer master, and I showed it to him. He said, oh, forget it. You have to get a new unit or something. But Krishna is a better computer whiz. He can fix things from, not even from inside, from beyond. He can fix from the other side altogether. Merciful Krishna ki jai. Being friendly to Krishna and accepting Krishna as friend, ki jai. Being friendly with fellow devotees, devotee friends, ki jai. New Raman ready, ki jai. Amogha being saved, ki jai. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Any comments, questions, points you would like to? Yes, Prabhu.
Haribo. So, could you please give the definition of the husband being fallen, being normal, and being exalted?
Easily. Fallen, normal, and exalted husband. Easily, yes, but whether it's going to be practical, I don't know. I remember one lady devotee asked me, we have so many passages saying wife should be this, should be that, wife this, wife's duty is that. Where are the duties of the husband? What should the husband do? But it's very nice you are asking this, because sometimes I think the duties of a wife should be told in secret so that the husbands don't hear. It's actually a secret, you know. The secret, how a wife manages her life with the husband, right? Same, vice versa. The husbands should be taught the duties of a husband, not of a wife. So in general, we hear, of course, that what is most expected from a husband or a man in general, is that a man knows why he lives. He knows where he goes. He has a goal in life. And this goal is transcendent. Because a human being cannot be satisfied with a mundane goal. We want a transcendent goal. Carl Gustav Jung, who got the highest marks from Srila Prabhupada in his dialectic spiritualism talks, says that in this postmodern period, we have chucked out God, we have thrown out God, and so he says we have lost hope for any transcendent meaning of life. So what will follow, he says, is inevitable depression. Because if something has no meaning, then happiness is impossible. It's the definition of torture, meaninglessness. You know, if something has meaning, it's austerity, even if it's tough. But if something is meaningless, it's torture, even if it's easy. Some tortures are not physically challenging, but they are meaningless. So, the first duty of every human, but especially of a husband and a man, is to have a very clear aspiration for a transcendent goal, be a sadhaka, aspiring for something transcendent. That means being a devotee, a very serious devotee. Devotee not in the sense that we just roll our beads and mumble the prescribed number of mantras, which is also good, but you want more. So meaning of life, sincere, honest, deep search for meaning, right? This way, trouble or no trouble, we can help, and how do I say, not fake, not just empty dogma, meaning that inside you actually are searching, you are a yogi, you want to find transcendence. That will help everybody around us to find a meaning also. And that's the one of the most valuable gifts we can give people, to help find meaning. Then even difficult things become meaningful and therefore tolerable. So this is what Srila Prabhupada says, being a good devotee. That's sort of one core definition. But then an excellent husband will take, of course, care of both physical and mental, so this is spiritual needs, but also mental and physical or whatever needs for shelter and protection. And a fallen husband, I would say there is one undisputable, non-controversial definition. This is a husband who physically is hurting, abusing the wife. It's a no-brainer, so to say. There's no non-controversial situation where the wife's duty is to remove herself to safety, like physically distance herself. Because otherwise, she puts herself in danger, her children in danger, and even husband's life in danger, in the sense that he just creates a very bad karma for himself. So that's the fallen one, right? Sort of very clear. Physically abusive, physically hurtful to her, maybe children, something. Normal means just, you know, he's not doing that, and he's on the path. And excellent, he's very clear about the goal of life, plus he is able to take care, comfort, and provide shelter. I'd say, that this is what I would say. And obviously, not being a husband, I'm preeminently qualified to give advice on family life. Can say any damn thing, you know. Nobody can come pointing, look at yourself. What did you do last week? Sorry, just like small disclaimer. That ask senior grihasthas. I'm just saying what I can understand from the shop. Okay? Let me have a look.
Wondering, like, if you're in a situation where
you're feeling some suffering, and you're seeing, okay, Krishna's teaching me something, he's got a purpose why I'm suffering like this. But then you just want, okay, Krishna, I think I learned it should stop now, but it continues. So, I mean, how to deal with that?
Yeah. Keep finding, I guess we need to keep finding gratitude and keep praying to Krishna. Also devotees' blessings are incredibly powerful. All devotees can Even sometimes very, very new devotees can, by their blessings and prayers, we get so much mercy from Krishna. Because Krishna, it's like, where did I hear this recently? Oh yeah, in Germany. He said that in Germany, the finances are controlled by the wife, not by the men, by the husband. So, in general, the statistics is 85% of purchases all over the world are made by women. And everything bought, 85% of things bought are bought, I mean, the decision is made by women. so he says it's controlled by women. So Krishna is delegating 100% of decisions of how his mercy is going to devotees. In the ninth canto, Durvasa runs to Vishnu saying, save me, give me mercy. And Vishnu says, sorry, you've come to the wrong address. You come for mercy, but my mercy is not with me. All my mercy is given to my devotees. He says, my devotee is like a good wife who controls the husband with her love. So my devotee is totally controlling me. So therefore, like a husband who gives the wallet or the credit card or whatever to the wife, so he says, I give the purse. What is this? The purse. I mean, the treasurer. There's some word with the word purse. Purse keeper.
Bursary.
That's the man.
Bursary.
Yeah. So Krishna says, I'm giving this purse with mercy to my devotee. So you came to the wrong address. You want mercy. It's not here. It's with my devotee. Go to my devotee. He has mercy. So then Durvasa goes to Ambarish. And Ambarish says, Sudarshana, if I have done anything good at all, at any moment in my life, any punya, anything at all, please give it all to Durvasa and save him. I always feel uncomfortable when I read it. I think, why give all punya? Couldn't he give, like, you know, at least 50%? Okay, 90%, but keep something for yourself, no? That's how I would do, you know. 100% sounds scary. But Ambarish gives 100% to Durvasa to be saved. So asking mercy, asking for some good wishes from devotees is very helpful. And keep looking for how whatever is happening to us is also Krishna's mercy, special mercy. Sometimes you may find newer and newer nuances of how that's a blessing, whatever is happening. And talk to Krishna. I personally frequently go to Radha Shyama Sundar and say, oh, Radha Shyama Sundar, I am sure you definitely overestimate me. 100%. You think much better of me than I am. I definitely can't take this type of lesson. You think I'm much more advanced than I am. And my experience frequently is that they actually listen. Sometimes it takes a few times to, you know. as Govindam, B.B. Govinda Maharaj is saying, they're people. He says, go talk to them, you know. Meaning that they are personal. So this is what I would say. To go deeper into understanding what's happening to us, we can make it a regular exercise to thank Krishna in different ways for what's happening. This way we see how it is mercy. It helps us assimilate, help us, I would say, metabolize that, digest this mercy, stomach this mercy. On one hand, on the other hand, we can negotiate with Krishna, saying that, Krishna, I think that was a little too advanced for me, sorry, whatever. And usually they are amenable to the discussion. They are very, I mean, they're people, you know? They're a person. So they can say, oh, you say, are you sure? Yeah, can we make it a little slower? Okay. I remember when I moved to Vrindavan, when I visited Vrindavan, it was bliss. I felt I'm in a fairy tale when I visited Vrindavan. Everything was magic. Every moment was a magic, brilliant, like a jewel. So then I was very eager to move, and then I moved to Vrindavan. And then things became so tough. My God. It's so tough. Your normal karma doesn't work there. Because, you know, because there, if you move there, you see that there is only one enjoyer there, and it's not me. And it's not easy. So I remember after a few months, I went to Radha Shyama Sundar and I said, my dear Radha Shyama Sundar, I am very sorry. Can we make a transition period a little longer? And immediately they sort of let up and the pressure decreased and it became. That's what I would say.
I was thinking like sometimes Krishna also apologizes. Krishna never apologizes to Prahlada. I'm sorry I'm late.
Nishingadev just like that, he said, I'm sorry I'm late, you got so much torture by your father. Krishna also apologized to Draupadi that he was late, even though philosophically it was the exact time that Krishna wanted to see that ultimate surrender to him while she was going through all other shelter that she calculated or we calculated. But it appears like Krishna also very apologetic and he very compassionate. So that's why Nishimadev told to Prahlad Maharaj, I'm sorry I'm late. But it's not late, but it just, that's how he is.
So it looks like he does make mistakes.
No. he has the apologetic, like he did through Balaram. Yesterday was Balaram's
Ras Purnima.
And while he was counseling to the gopis, and one of the four process was that he delivered Krishna's message that Krishna is apologizing, that sorry he puts you so much in trouble and going through. So he's apologetic always.
Yes.
In a sense, he cares for us.
Yes, yes. He's compassionate. Yeah. He feels our pain. I mean, his compassion means compassio, suffering together. So, yeah. He even reveals this to the gopis.
Yes.
When he disappears during Rasa Lila, the gopis sort of needle him. They say, Krishna, there are three types of lovers.
Yeah.
Those who reciprocate equally, those who do not reciprocate, and those who, who reciprocate regardless of anything. So which is better? So Krishna answers, and it is a very interesting discussion. There's like six categories in his answer. But then he says something interesting. Basically he says that, dear gopis, I wanted to offer you the highest ecstasy of intense love in separation. This is why sometimes when somebody is praying to me, worshipping me, I do not respond to intensify his eagerness and feelings. And the gopis think, oh, we thought he doesn't love us as much as we do, he love him, but it looks like he loves us even more. We would not be able to do this, to tolerate giving apparent trouble to the lover, but he could, to increase our ecstasy. So he loves us, we thought he doesn't love us, but he not only loves us, he loves us much more than we even thought he could love us. We cannot love him like he loves us. So that was in that section. So he sort of apologizes, And they do realize that, yeah, actually we blamed him, but it turns out that he was even more merciful than we could have even imagined. Sorry. I have a super popular seminar, Suffering in Spiritual Life. So there is.
When you were speaking about the roles, you know, the husband and the wife, it sounded like you were saying that the wife's main job is to serve the husband.
Did
and
I?
The husband is the one that focuses on the goal of life, you know, being transcendent, the transcendental goal. And this, ideally, this would be fabulous, you know, if everybody was perfect in their role, but it seems so important that both husband and wife are both focusing
yes.
on that goal, because things are so unpredictable in Kali Yuga.
Yes.
You know, we help each other. And
yes. Thank you. This is a very good comment. I don't know how to put it, formulate it nicely to avoid stepping on a landmine of political incorrectness. In the modern world, but yes, definitely it's happening. So when I was saying this, I was saying about, you know, like the abstract ideal sort of masculine energy and feminine energy, sort of, right? But in real life, definitely I frequently see that the lady will be much more Krishna conscious and have a much more clear picture of the ultimate goal of life, and she will inspire and re-inspire and refocus the husband again and again on the highest goal of life. In practice, I've seen it. I've observed it in my own eyes very often. So when I spoke about it, I spoke in that abstract ideal sense of the sort of, and ideally all of us are supposed to become, what do they call it, androgyn, right? It's like a whole person, masculine and feminine, having the masculine and feminine side together in perfect balance. And this is the ideal purpose of marriage. You can sometimes see there is a rough, angry brahmachari, and then he marries and he becomes balanced. He all of a sudden becomes sensitive, and he becomes So that's how it's supposed to work. He appreciates, you know, the compassion. He becomes more compassionate. I spoke recently to one very nice devotee, very senior devotee, and I said, I really admire how you are considerate of others. He said, oh, that's credit of my wife. He openly said, that's. Credit goes fully to my wife. She taught me to be considerate of others. So that's how it's supposed to work. Plus, if somebody wants to be a lifelong celibate, it means that you have to do this inside. It's easier and more natural for whatever percent, 90% of humanity to do this in family, to. And that's the idea of love. You see some ideal quality, and that's why love is troublesome sometimes, because you project the ideal on the other person, which may or may not be in the other person. So the man sees grace, beauty, sensitivity, compassion in a woman, and he falls in love, right? And the wife sees some other, you know, clarity of purpose, energy, discipline, and so forth in the man, protection, and she falls in love. And it may or may not be in a person. So it's also very helpful to understand that a lot of these things are the ideals, divine ideals, which the real life humans may or may not have. We just practice, we try to help each other, and that's how the family actually works. We help balance each other in real life. And if somebody wants to be a lifelong celibate, then it means we need to do the work on our own, with the help of the lords and teachers and Vaishnava's blessings and then to be both disciplined and sensitive, for example, right? Or both very considerate but also very disciplined. But in life we very frequently see that the lady will have much more clear picture of the goal of life. She'll be very disciplined and this sort of theoretically from this Platonic word, the so-called masculine qualities, or not so-called, yeah, so like nominally masculine qualities, which is good. It means she's balanced. It means she's balanced.
I was thinking this situation about women. You know, that Mother Sukadeva was mentioning, you see that so much in the Bhagavatam, the women knowing the goal of life. You know, you have the wives of the Brahmanas or the
yes.
Kaliyas
yes.
wives, or you see the Dhritarashtra, or
yes.
you see Ravana, you see, you know, over and over and over again, you see so many women who are actually knew the goal of life and actually help their husbands,
yes.
and their husbands appreciated.
Yes.
What they did.
So yeah. So therefore, I sort of emphasize that the lady will also be conversant with dharma. So she's trained perfectly in dharma. You have the Bhagavatam mentioning perfect lady philosophers, you know, perfect science of spirit. Vayuna and I forgot the name. Some. In Daksha dynasty. There are some. So every human, I mean, Athato Brahma Jigyasa, you're human, you must investigate these values. But taken in an abstract way, then this is more the responsibility from the masculine side, to have very clear idea of the goal of life. However, yes, all human beings need to know the goal of life and pursue the goal of life. That's the point of
view. Okay. So at one point we were talking about the word innocent and how Prabhupada perhaps was using
the older meaning.
Well, according to the Merriam-Webster dictionary, he's using the primary definition.
Primary.
Yeah, that's the and the legal definition is the tertiary definition.
Uh-huh.
So apparently, according to American English, he's using correct English.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the British who are outdated.
Ah.
Well, he's using correct American English. That's the primary definition.
You know what? They made a study. It turns out that Shakespearean pronunciation was closer to the American pronunciation. It was the Brits who went way beyond the older English pronunciation. The Shakespearean was much closer to the American pronunciation. You guys sort of kept the original how it was. And they moved out into some other dialectical pronunciation. I feel shy. We've gone to 9:25.
I just have one quote. This is the last one. This is a quote from Srila Prabhupada. I just heard this a couple days ago, talking about balance, marriage. Prabhupada said, ideal marriage means the husband is a sincere servant of Krishna, and the wife is a sincere maidservant of her husband. I'm just saying, that's Prabhupada's quote. I don't know anything about it. I heard that.
He's just
Prabhupada
saying,
said that.
Don't throw anything at him. He's just saying.
Put that on your hand.
Yeah, but again, nowadays, all of us need to have a very clear idea where we are going and why we are going, who we are, and so forth. Yes. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Thank you very much. It's been a great honor. One chakalpa dharagashtati, that's in the relation of the name.